John Batchelor. The renminbi, the currency of the People's Republic of China and its troubled economy. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, joins me as my colleague and co-host. And we're very pleased to welcome our colleague Charles Ortel of Charles Ortel on the Money podcast to comment on the inability of China to hold the line on the renminbi, hitting in these last days new lows every day. Charles, a very good evening to you. I recall the stories over these years that China would always defend the renminbi. It'll never clear 7, always would approach 7 and back up to 6.9, sometimes as low as 6.8. But here we are well above 7, and there doesn't seem to be a defense in sight. Has everything changed in Beijing? Are they no longer ready to defend their currency? Good evening to you, Charles.
Good evening, John, and hi, Gordon. I think, as Gordon has been noting for now decades, the Chinese business model is badly broken, and it's taken a while for the rest of the world to catch up with Gordon. But now I think the serious investors have been taking money out of China for some time. So you have a stock of wealth issue. A lot of wealth was trapped inside China, and people are finding ways to get it out. Then you have the GDP, the currency flows during a year. I think both measures, China is in deep trouble. And of course, the Chinese government's going to say, we'll do everything we can to defend the currency. That's never a good sign. If it were really strong, you wouldn't have to say that.
Gordon, you have a question for Charles.
Charles, as you know, Beijing has said exactly that in the last couple of days. It's been getting its state banks and other parties to dump dollars, all sorts of things to maintain even the 7.3 level. This, of course, is in the context of other countries that have tried to defend their currencies. And, of course, the most famous example is George Soros attacking the pound. In general, how successful are countries in sort of bucking the market?
Not very successful, typically. I mean, when you get to this kind of stage, it's a sign that the model for the country is likely badly broken. You look at Japan, for an example. They have stubbornly gone down a ruinous track since 1989, their last peak. And they just cannot fix stupid over there. And again, the situation gets worse and worse and worse. The country has too much debt. The population is aging and not growing. The internal markets are not there. I think China, as you have actually richly demonstrated through your work, Gordon, China's business model is broken. And it's being hostage to the Chinese Communist Party is never a good sign for an outside investor. So I think they can try different approaches. They're not going to work in the end. On a given day, a government and a central bank can punish even George Soros or a large speculator. But over time, the weight, I think, of world opinion is shifting against the Chinese model.
Charles, the analysis of the Chinese economy that I read most recently offered three models for the way forward. The first was the overwhelming debt, just to forgive it, eat it. Bail out the banks, especially the People's Bank of China, the big one with all the loans that can't be repaid. The second one was same thing, but do it more slowly, similar to the Japanification model used, as you just mentioned, Japan. And the third one was too radical, but it was presented, which is to switch to a consumer economy, stop the surveillance, stop the interference, stop the state-owned enterprise. Do any of those choices seem practical to you for the present Chinese Communist Party?
I think it's a zero-sum game. Either there's a Chinese Communist Party or there isn't. Now, a plus for this whole picture would be, imagine if the Chinese Communist Party were to disappear in an orderly fashion, and imagine if the Chinese diaspora decided, you know what, maybe I do want to go back to China now that we don't have to worry about the Chinese Communist Party. There's a lot of wealth outside China tied to or controlled by the Chinese diaspora. So you could imagine a more hopeful scenario that the CCP melts the same way the Soviet Union did, but that may be too Pollyanna-ish a thing to think about.
Gordon, you have a question.
Charles, your last point just reminds me that when Xi Jinping became General Party Secretary, and that was November 2012, the following month, he gave a secret speech to party cadres in Guangdong, And he criticized Gorbachev for not being, as he said, quote, a real man and defending Soviet communism. So I think that what we're going to see is Xi Jinping fight to the end. And Xi has been fighting basically every good proposal that would rescue the Chinese economy. So I certainly agree with you that despite all the money Beijing has at the moment, it's not enough to defend their currency.
Absolutely. I mean, on the one hand, and this is relating to China, though it won't sound like it at the outset. On the one hand, we have investor love for AI. You know, AI stocks are trading in stratospherically high multiples. On the other hand, we haven't yet contemplated fully enough what AI means for the average worker. And it means the average worker is not going to be working. So China, as Joe Biden said on his trip to Vietnam, I think China does have a very serious youth unemployment and unemployment problem to address. At the same time, they have a lot of debt and they're not making too many true friends around the world by their activities.
Charles, what we have here is China in trouble. However, it's offered to me this possibility that this suits Xi Jinping and the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party, not undermines them. Because closing the borders or closing trade or closing down trade and turning inward, a Maoist solution from the 1950s, would serve the surveillance state, the state security bosses, and serve Xi Jinping, conducive to his remark, eating bitterness. Is that a possibility that the shutdown strengthens Xi and the party?
Well, I think it would strengthen him politically, because obviously if you have to live inside the borders of China, you fear their surveillance state, but it will accelerate the decline of the currency. Because as people perceive this to be a realistic option, what multinational company is going to want to have a lot of money trapped inside a repressive surveillance, an even more repressive surveillance state where the consumers are not there?
Does it sound reasonable to you that China would cut itself off that dramatically in order to solve this problem? We have about a minute.
Sadly, I fear that is definitely an option you'd have to assign a high probability to. Is it 25%? Is it 33%? It's certainly a realistic and sadly realistic option.
Gordon, your measure of that model, which sounds like science fiction, to withdraw from the world or at least no longer boast about your international trade, is that something that would attract Xi and his supporters?
Xi Jinping has actually been closing China off for the last 3 or 4 years. He's done it slowly because he didn't have the political consensus to go as far as he wants. But right now, he's going very fast in actually cutting China off, something that Chinese emperors and Mao Zedong did periodically through Chinese history.
And that cutoff, would that show in the currency, Gordon? Could that be what we're seeing?
Well, eventually, as Charles said, everyone's going to abandon China, including the Chinese. So it will tank the currency. But Beijing will, you know, at least in the short term, try to do all it can to keep it up. But as Charles says, no government beats the market.
Charles Ortel of On the Money with Charles Ortel podcast. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, writing at Gatestone Newsweek in The Hill. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,